Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Let's Cover It, brought to you by The Covering Church.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again for joining us for Let's Cover It for our second episode of our second season. Chris, I can't believe that we're into season two, but hey, I gotta like it. I'm not quite sure what qualifies as a season, but nonetheless, our production company told us that we're in season two, so I'm good with that. And to be honest with you, if you didn't watch the first episode of season two, you probably want to do that because we absolutely jumped into the deep end of the pool. And so
we're never afraid to tackle.
We're not afraid. That's right. Yeah. We may not be on here much longer, but we're not afraid.
Well, that's true. We might get thrown off of every platform there is, but hey, it's been fun, right?
It has been. And so until they say that, like I've said before, I'll keep doing what I'm doing until they tell me I can't. But nonetheless, we've entitled this Christians and Politics. Now, there's a ton of videos out there about the current situation of our political affairs and everything of that nature and everything that's going to be coming up and all of that. That's not where we are. We may talk about that some, but that's not going to be our primary agenda. Our primary agenda is simply to share with you from a biblical perspective, how Christians are to respond, not react, but to respond to the political climate, the culture, and even what churches and religious leaders may say. So with that being said, as we recap our last podcast, we started on a basis of where government came from, and we realize that God is the one who instituted government, and he has a system. Not every country or world system follows that type of system, and so. But as a result of that, as a citizen, it is my responsibility to do what I can to respond in such a way that it gives a biblical perspective and not necessarily just a cultural perspective. One of the things that Chris had mentioned before is the fact that we don't want to get caught up in emotionalism or sensationalism or, you know, ride the bandwagon of this particular party or that particular party. That's really not us. And so with that being said, once again, let me just simply say that my name is Dwayne Lee. This is Chris Dunford, and it has certainly been a joy for me to be able to sit here with these podcasts with a very dear friend and what I believe one of the most knowledgeable individuals that I've ever met. He's probably forgotten more than I will ever learn, but that's okay.
There's a lot of stuff rattling around.
I wasn't going to say that, but nonetheless. So, Chris, with just that introduction, we wanted to take this a step further and really begin to look at history and how that Christians or not may have influenced religious or governments, period, not religious governments necessarily, but governments in general, and how that worked and as a result of that, what may or may not have taken place. And so I wanted to start there. There's some other, we're on a path. So, but I wanted to start there just to see exactly for our listeners, because they may not necessarily understand if there was any type of Christian or biblical influence over world governments.
I think that's a good question, Dwayne. I think the first question we have to ask is, why do governments exist?
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at Romans 13,
right,
God says that governments exist to keep peace, mm-hmm. to promote, you know, people, to provide stability.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ideas. But let me go back and kind of touch on our last podcast. I don't mean to say that God raises up evil governments on an active level. God never is involved in evil, but God uses governments.
It does.
So when Paul says that governments are ordained of God, there are two elements. One is passive and one's active.
Mm-hmm.
God can raise up active nations, active governments. So, for example, in the late 1800s, early 1800s, in America, there was this view of manifest destiny. It was believed that God had ordained America, and it was our job to expand that nation from sea to sea, sea to shining sea. This idea that, you know, explorers went out, Lewis and Clark went out. You have all of these explorers that went out to the West, and they explored the West, and then they expanded to the West, and it led to the Mexican War, where we saw ourselves as in this cause, really a debate over the southern border between the Rio Grande and,
right,
you know, where was the Texas border with Mexico. It led to this war, and there's this war in 1845 that America's involved in and with Mexico. But in the end, it led to New Mexico and California and Arizona and all of these areas to the West. We have the Louisiana Purchase under Jefferson's administration, buys it from Napoleon. All of this view that there was this manifest destiny that God had ordained America, and that America was a godly nation, and that this country was to spread the gospel to the world. We see it in the 1870s in England,
mm-hmm.
where England was an evangelistic and a missionary powerhouse in the mid to late 1800s,
right,
where the gospel was going around the world because England had an empire that the sun never set on. They ruled nations all around the world. And so in their view, this missionary power went out. So there becomes this question, as is government designed for providing stable culture, or is government designed for promoting the kingdom? There's that line where Christians, I think, have struggled throughout Christian history,
mm-hmm.
to find
the balance.
The balance of, yeah, what government is all about. Why does it exist? And what is our participation level as a result?
Yep.
And I think you can go back to Israel, 1 Samuel 18. They want a king.
Right.
And God had given them prophets in a theocratic government where they were ruled by prophets and judges. And mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, we want to be like the rest of the world. We, right, want kings. We, they want have king, kings. We want a king.
That's right.
Okay. If they've got it, we want it.
Right.
And again, it was a blurring of what was the purpose of government.
Right.
Was in Israel, was government designed as a theocratic organism led by God, where God was the king and this was his chosen people and he was going to rule them as king? Or was there going to be an earthly king that was going to rule them and take that away from the position that God held?
Right.
That's because Israel had lost sight of the purpose of their government. It originally was established as for the purpose of the a God speaking through prophets and God speaking through the judges, God speaking through those men, his direct will to the nation of Israel in regard to their worship, in regard to their praising of him, in regard to building this kingdom culture within the nation of Israel. And they threw that all out.
They threw it away.
To have a monarchy.
That's
so
right.
Now all of a sudden, government shifts from being a theocratic government where God is in control to now men are in control.
Right.
And so Christianity has struggled with this throughout its history. What is my role? How much participation do I have?
Mm-hmm.
We see that Christianity on steroids had blown up the Roman Empire and it became a Christian nation. But
right.
in the process, as that spread into Europe,
mm-hmm.
these monarchies who now came to pass where the kings themselves believed in the divine right of kings.
Mm-hmm.
I've been established as king because God ordained it.
Right.
And so these monarchies that came into Europe and then this warfare within Christianity itself with the Protestant Reformation versus Catholicism, and you have the Spanish Inquisition, you have the French government under the Pope's leadership destroying the Huguenots, you have Christians killing Christians
mm-hmm.
in the name of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And
right.
and all of it for what purpose? To maintain the king? Or to build a kingdom minded government? That was the question. And none of those men that were involved in it ever stopped to ask that question.
That's true.
Why does government exist and what is its purpose?
That's right. That's right. Which is where, for some, the phrase, and we talked about this off air, this phrase between church and state.
Yes.
And what does that mean, or what that should mean or could mean, and where it came from and all of that.
So you can go back to Europe in the Middle Ages, where Catholicism ranked as the head of, and we don't have to just leave it in the Christian realm. You can look at the Muslims in the radical Muslim imams ruling under Islam, under Islamic law.
Right.
And you can look at how theocratic governments invariably lose their sight of promoting godly principles and become powerhouses for the purpose of controlling masses of people,
right,
in a lot of sense.
Right.
We've been accused of that in the past, and I think legitimately that accusation might be a little bit accurate in some ways.
Sure.
You have Catholicism in Europe ruling, and then in England, you have the English Civil War, and Cromwell comes on with a Protestant view,
right,
but he's no different. He establishes a dictatorship, a
true
Cromwellian dictatorship, where he's no different.
He's no different.
Because
that's right.
You cannot legislate people's hearts.
That's true.
And so that's God's business. That's where kingdom theology comes in.
Right.
And so government, we have to ask the question as Christians, mm-hmm, before we ever get involved in government, whether it's in Russia or Germany or China or America or Canada or wherever it is,
right,
we have to ask the question, why does government exist? What is its purpose? What is its relationship to the kingdom? And when we answer those questions, that will define how far we get involved in government.
There you go.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely makes
so
sense.
So there are three levels, I think, that we can see in which Christians have historically been involved in government.
Right. And number one would be?
Well, number one would be a complete disregard or a complete detachment from government altogether.
I like that word, detachment.
Yeah. So I think when you look at Christian communities that existed in the first century, they were not tied to the Roman government at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, early on, because the church was looked at as a Jewish organism under the Roman Caesars, they were given quite a bit of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But once that the Jews and the Christians separated, especially after the Jewish revolt in 66 AD to 73 AD, there was this rebellion.
Right.
And then the church was pushed separated out in the Roman view,
right,
from the Jewish community.
Mm-hmm.
Then they began to persecute the church significantly and seriously.
Right.
So that meant that there was these enclaves of Christians that were living underground. They weren't allowed to have jobs. They had trouble feeding themselves. They were being Nero, it's known that he was lighting the streets by taking cages and putting Christians in them and lighting them on fire to light the streets.
Right.
They were dying for what they believed in, but they couldn't do anything to change the government,
right,
from the outside.
Right.
Okay. So, and we can see it in the United States with the, Shaker movement,
mm-hmm,
the Quaker movement. You know, right now we have the Amish and the Mennonites who have zero to do with government. They don't vote. They don't have any involvement at all in government,
mm-hmm,
because in their mind, government is separate from kingdom.
Right.
So in their Christian view, government exists for one purpose. The kingdom is entirely different. They're not tied together whatsoever.
And so in their mind, separation of church and state.
In their minds, they have no problem with separation of church and state, because
right,
they don't see state as being involved
at all
in regard to the kingdom.
Correct.
That it's an earthly institution that God installed,
mm-hmm,
for the purpose of just ruling over men and providing, you know, again, peace, stability, culture, whatever that looks like.
Right, right.
And so in their mind, we don't get involved in that, because our sole purpose in existence is advancing the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in America, there was this, I mean, right down the street here from where I live, there's a an old Shaker commune.
Okay.
Dates back to the 1800s.
Okay.
There's barns and houses and all of these things built in this little community,
mm-hmm,
and they lived there as a community. Basically became very inbred.
Yeah.
Because it was an isolated community.
Sure.
And they did not, they were very closed,
right,
as a community,
mm-hmm,
and they had zero involvement in government whatsoever.
Right.
In fact, if any of their members got involved in government,
then they were cast out.
Yeah. Joshua Humphreys, one of the most famous Quakers in America, designed the first ships for the U.S. Navy. And because he was a ship designer, initially he designed, you know, commercial cargo ships,
right?
You know, trading vessels. When he went into the designing warships, his Quaker community cut him off. He was no longer allowed to come to the Quaker house and worship. He wasn't allowed because that was, in their mind, supporting government,
right?
And war, mm-hmm. which was an extension of government. And sure. So they cut him off.
Right.
That's the first role that Christians see.
So role number two.
Role number two is more of a passive role in government. That is, as individuals, we participate in government, but not collectively.
Okay.
So that would be voting your conscience. Mm-hmm. That would be winning your neighbors, working within the communities to build Christian communities, to be involved in changing hearts and minds. So when... we're going to talk about the third one in a minute, but
right.
you go back to the American Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
North and South pastors were preaching out of the same Bible, mm-hmm. preaching two entirely different messages.
Right.
One was of freedom and liberty, and the other one was of enslavement and establishing a what they believed was a new kingdom of God.
Right.
They weren't on the same page at all, and yet they were both kingdom citizen groups
right.
that should have been working together. And so the passive view would have been, let's work on the hearts and minds of slave owners, like Paul did, as we talked about in the last podcast,
right.
with Philemon in regard to Onesimus.
Right.
We change the hearts and minds from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And so then government can go on and do whatever it's going to do, but we're going to work in the community to establish godly communities by winning people to Jesus Christ.
Right. And to establish workings that would promote biblical insight.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so for many people around the world, because they can't be involved in their government,
right,
there is a way that Christians can change their communities
right.
by working on their hearts and minds and bringing them to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ.
Correct.
Having the Holy Spirit come in, and they build a kingdom within a kingdom.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that's one. That's two.
Mm-hmm.
How about three?
So the third one would be direct involvement. And direct involvement, even within that, there are levels. As we said,
sure.
you can go to a theocracy, whether it's a Muslim theocracy or it's a Hindu theocracy or it's a Christian theocracy. That's really the concept on steroids. That's where we lose the whole idea of what government exists for.
Mm-hmm.
Does government exist as a microcosm of the kingdom, or does it exist as an earthly institution for controlling the, you know, culture, to control
right.
and bring peace to the culture,
right?
To build up economy, to build up, you know, lifestyle, to build up a community. You know, is that why it exists, or does it exist to promote this kingdom? And so, in the 1700s, 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, you have this theological view of amillennial and postmillennialism. In both of those,
right.
whether it's that the world's going to go to hell in a handbasket or it has to get perfect for the Lord to come back,
right.
in both of those, they began to see government as directly involved in establishing earthly kingdom culture mm-hmm. so that Jesus could come back.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we can look at the first great awakening. We can look at the American Revolution where, in a lot of ways, Americans were believing that freedom, you could see it in the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. You know, we, the people of the United States, you can look at all the statements that are in the Declaration of Independence in the sense that God had ordained life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness. And so in the enlightened world of the 1700s, they believed that God had moved to bring about a nation that was a godly nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, the modern historians can argue that America was never built on Christianity, but they need to read all of the messages that were being preached by pastors back then.
Absolutely.
And they were preaching this idea that we need to establish a Christian nation.
Mm-hmm.
And for the purpose of establishing kingdom mentality so that Jesus could come back again. Mm-hmm. And in England in the late 1700s, same thing. The establishment of the YMCA, the YWCA, the Boy Scouts. You can go down through all of these organizations that were established with the idea of developing piety, Christianity, to make a nation perfect so that Jesus could come back.
Okay.
So there was a theological undergirding to all, underpinning to all of that.
Sure.
And in that theological underpinning, it drove Christians to get directly involved in the government, where they ran for office. They put biblical values above their nation's constitutions or their nation's governing documents.
Mm-hmm.
They began to push this idea that we have to be directly involved so that we can establish a godly nation.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
And so in our world where we live in today, because Americans can have such involvement in our government,
mm-hmm.
those questions of how much involvement we should be in is a huge question. It's a big battle to determine. And in order to answer that question, you have to answer the first question, why does government exist? In your mind, if government exists just to provide peace and security and economy, if that's the case, human government is never going to be on the level of a theocracy.
Correct.
So then in that case, we work in the community to win people to Jesus. That becomes our priority.
Right.
And then when we vote, we vote for godly principles because we're kingdom first and American second, or whatever country you live in.
Right.
We're kingdom first, country second.
There you go.
Okay, so that's a passive view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. But you can look at the active view. You know, when you and I were younger and we were early in the ministry,
mm-hmm.
I remember you and I got involved in a political party. We actually jumped on board a presidential candidate. If mm-hmm. you remember, we were supporting Alan Keyes. You and I both. We were
right.
actively involved in his presidential
run.
You know, you and I and
yeah.
Wes and
sure.
Danny Hillard and a few yeah. friends of ours that were involved.
Right.
Got involved in this pushing to get him elected.
Right.
And so in doing that, whether we knew it or not, we're pushing to bring government and God together.
Right.
In a sort of new Israel, a new nation that is ruled and ultimately directed by men who through the scriptures are going to rule the country in a godly way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The question is today, as we're much older, was that wise? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, that is a great question because as we look at it, we go, well, you know, that's an active kind of thing. And was it a bad thing? I don't think it was a bad thing. Was it the right way to do it? I don't know.
That's the thing.
I don't know. But we've learned from it.
We have.
Certainly. We've learned from it. And we've grown from it. And we've seen out of that really the purpose of how the Christian should work, either on a local level, on a state level, or a national level.
Yeah, I think we could go back to the American Civil War. And if people aren't aware, there were over 1 million people that died in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there were more people that died in America in the Civil War than all other wars that we've ever fought combined. But the roots to the Civil War started in the pulpits.
It did.
And if we understand that, then we can ask this question, were those pastors losing sight of what their primary mission was as pastors?
I'm going to go ahead and answer that. Probably so.
Probably so, yes.
Probably so.
Because you had... If you look at the Confederate States of America's Constitution,
mm-hmm.
it actually explicitly says that they were establishing a nation led by God.
Mm-hmm.
And so their preachers were preaching that God was ordaining a new spiritual nation. While the North was preaching, pastors, how evil slavery was. And there was no way you could put a Southern pastor and a Northern pastor in a room without them breaking into a fist fight.
Right.
Because ultimately it led to a war.
That's right.
and our the wisdom of Lincoln in his second inaugural address when he says both worship the same God, both read the same scriptures.
Right.
So here were pastors preaching what they thought on both sides was a righteous cause that went to war with each other.
Right.
That led to a million people dead.
Right.
Okay. And so you have kingdom-minded people in a war with kingdom-minded people.
That makes sense.
That's right. They should have, pastors on both sides of the Mason-Dixon line should have come together and said, let's establish a message that we want to preach to change this nation from the inside out, both, you know, but they didn't.
But they did.
One side wanted to save slavery. One side wanted to remove slavery.
Right.
Ultimately, I think the righteous move was to remove slavery. I would have definitely been on the abolitionist side of the movement.
Sure.
But I would have been preaching. I would have been careful, I think, in my wisdom today, knowing where that led.
Right.
John Brown.
Right.
So John Brown was an abolitionist who was a godly man. I mean, he knew the word of God. He carried a Bible around with him.
Right.
Very fervent firebrand preacher, but he leads a slave rebellion in 1855, I think, 1857, leads a slave revolt to arm the slaves. He goes to Harper's Ferry, which was which is an arsenal that held weapons for the U.S. Army.
Sure.
Takes over the arsenal, is going to take all the muskets and so on that are in that arsenal, and the swords and bayonets, and he's going to take them to the slaves and arm them to lead them in a righteous revolt against the South.
Right.
Interestingly enough, Robert E. Lee was a colonel in the U.S. Army, led a Marine contingent that captures John Brown. He storms Harper's Ferry, breaks in, takes him out, and they hanged him.
Mm.
Okay, so when they hanged him, he was a criminal. In 1862, the Union Army is marching, singing a song about John Brown, and that his truth is marching on. He becomes a hero to the Northern cause. The sad part about it is a Christian broke in, took a Christian, and they hanged him.
Right.
Okay, so we as Christians, if we are going to make a difference for the kingdom, the one thing we have to do over and over and over again is stop and say, am I going to divide the kingdom for the country, or am I going to divide the country for the kingdom?
Mm. That's a great question. And there is probably where we'll stop.
Yes, a good place to stop.
Yeah, probably a good place to stop. And so we'll continue this conversation in our next episode. But thank you once again for joining us today, and I hope it's been an encouragement to you, maybe even a little bit of a challenge as we look at Christians and politics. So until next time, may God bless you, give you absolutely everything that you need. Until then, God bless.
Thanks again for joining us. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Let's Cover It podcast, brought to you by The Covering Church.